Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. And we need it today. We've got a great prescription for you today. We're going to tell you how to build strong hearts in your kids, how to cultivate humility, respect, and resiliency. That is something we talk about a lot on this show, and our author today has written a book called Just That, Strong Heart, Cultivating Humility, Respect, and Resilience in Your Child. Jill Garner is an accomplished speaker, advocate, and founder of Manners of the Heart, a nonprofit reawakening respect in our society for the sake of the next generation. She is the author of the award-winning Raising Respectful Children in a Disrespectful World, Raising Unselfish Children in a Self-Absorbed World, and Manners of the Heart, an elementary school curriculum that helps children see beyond themselves to become all God created them to be. Her work is endorsed by Focus on the Family, Family Life Today, so many others, and she and her husband live in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Jill, welcome to the show. We're so glad to have you here today.
Oh, thank you so much, Jessica. I'm just delighted to be here.
Jill, I am delighted too, and I'll tell you, your book is so charming. It's a series of stories, really. You have a very powerful way of storytelling and just making the challenges that we're facing today as parents seem so real and so relatable. So I would love for you just to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about you and how you came to know the Lord and have this passion for manners of the heart.
Well, it's going to sound like a long story, but I'll keep it short. When I was 7 years old, I accepted Christ in my little hometown church in Vicksburg, Mississippi, and he called me just, I almost heard it, Jill, and I stepped into the aisle and ran down the aisle, jumped in my pastor's arms, and I said, I want Jesus in my heart. And he came in, and that's really, you know, where it began for me. Interesting childhood, certainly very far from a picture-perfect childhood, lots of struggles and just certain dynamics, family dynamics that were difficult. And but the Lord brought me through it all, and of course I could write 5 books on that on that piece of life and how God brought me, you know, all the way through and to this understanding that he brought me to later in life when I had gone on to college as an interior designer and an art major. And then little did I know at that time, his true training for me through all those years really had been, as someone once said to me, Jill, I think God meant you to be the interior designer of hearts, not the interior designer of homes. And I said, whoa, maybe perhaps that's my calling. And I have identical twin sons who, of course, are very much grown men now and grandchildren. And, you know, the whole scope of family certainly fits under what my life is day in and day out with 7 grandchildren and love every minute of it. When God called me to this ministry and to this calling, it was really an awakening when those grown men now, my twin sons were very young. And in first grade, and we entered school, and kids would come to our home and with very different perspectives on, you know, what life should be and the kind of the rights and the wrongs and the expectations. And it was so different. And I began looking around at my own boys when we went to a birthday party. And my dear friend called me the next morning and said, Jill, if you don't get a handle on those boys, they're going to be in jail before they're 10 years old. And that'll get your attention as a mama, won't it? And I said, but they're boys. And she said, no, Jill, you got to get a handle on those boys. And when I looked around and tried to make an assessment of, you know, she's kind of right, they're a little much, what's going on, and their friends seem to be, it's when I really realized that we were getting off track. This was in the early 80s, and that we were really getting off track and falling into this trap of helping our children develop esteem for themselves. And, you know, if we really search Scripture, Scripture is very clear that we are to esteem God, we are to esteem His Word, and we are to esteem others. And in the process of esteeming God, His Word, and esteeming others, we gain respect for ourselves. But when it is flipped on end and we begin esteeming ourselves as we were told to do and told to raise our children, and that was the height of the self-esteem movement, to esteem themselves, we actually become an obstacle to our children learning to esteem God and His Word. And it brings the troubles that we're living with in our society today. I've watched it happen as time goes on. So that was really my awakening to this calling, this understanding God gave me when it didn't seem like anyone else was getting it yet, that self-esteem was really given to us to destroy us. Out of the humanist movement is really where it came from. Carl Rogers is the one responsible for really telling the rest of the world out of the psychiatric and psychological circles, this is what we needed. And so that really became my life's work underneath everything that you described earlier. It's to help us understand that self-esteem was really given to us to destroy us, not to help us. And we've pretty much proven that out.
You know, Jill, I agree with you so much. And I see kids today who are desperately trying to cultivate a sense of self-esteem. And there's a lot about self-worth and self-esteem. But when you don't compare that, when the yardstick is not your identity in Christ, I think that's mm-hmm. one of the things that's leading to a crisis of confidence mm-hmm. that is happening in kids today, having a crisis of mental health, because the standard mm-hmm. is always changing. And, you know, we hear these messages that seem so innocuous, that seem so harmless, like follow your heart, trust your gut, things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But we know mm-hmm. from Scripture in Jeremiah 17 that God tells us the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately sick. Who can understand it? And it is true. And that can seem like a hopeless place to be. But when we look at the mm-hmm. identity that we have in Christ, which you weave beautifully through your book, giving messages of we're chosen, we are cherished, all of these things, that is something that will never change, something we can have so much confidence in. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that parents will take to heart your message of helping to build a strong heart. One of the things I see, Jill, is that a lot of kids, they don't have that strength. They don't have that resilience today. And we talk a lot about, you know, people will say Gen Z is our snowflake generation or other things that are mm-hmm. not kind. And I don't endorse that mm-hmm. viewpoint because I've got kids right. in Gen Z. But how mm-hmm. do you formulate the concept of strong heart? I love what you said about being an interior designer of the heart. What does a strong mm-hmm. heart look like?
Mm-hmm. Well, my definition that I came to for a strong heart is a morally courageous kid who's grounded in truth and fortified with self-respect. So I'll take that apart a little bit. So what do I mean by morally courageous? This isn't a kid who just knows right from wrong, but this is a kid who is courageous and is so grounded in truth and so solid in knowing his identity, as you said, his identity in Christ, who he is, who he belongs to, what he's about, what he stands for, that he will be able to stand up and to lead, and that he's the one that will speak up when everyone else stays quiet. He's going to stand up. She's going to stand up when others, you know, refuse to stand. This is that child who's going to speak up and actually get involved and really become a leader. And one of the things that I love to talk about is, you know, this is a kid with grit. If we want to put an acronym to it, you know, that is always helpful. It helps us remember. But if we mm-hmm. wanted to think of, you know, grit, what does a kid look like? You know, how do we develop grit? And what does that stand for? You know, I believe it stands for guts, resilience, integrity, and tenacity. If we can build those things into our children, they're going to become those strong hearts who will lead, who are not going to be persuaded. You know, Scripture says, you know, not going to be tossed to and fro, you know, with the waves as the waves come over them. They're not going to be tossed about. They're going to keep their heads up. And, you know, how do we do that? In a practical sense, you know, if we're going to help our children develop guts, we have to allow them to fail and try again, right? That's where guts come from. Part of that mm-hmm. self-esteem movement is we were supposed to make them happy. I have trouble saying that word. I really do. Because it's not about making our children happy. That's not it. That's mm-hmm. got us in so much trouble. You know, if we're worried about and our goal is, I just want my child to be happy, then we're going to get in trouble because we're going to do whatever we have to do to avoid our child being disappointed. So we're going to say yes when we should say no. We're going to make certain that they're happy every minute. So we're going to overindulge them, give them when we shouldn't, right? Give them too much and expect too little from them, and we're not going to allow them to fail, because we know as adults it's in failure that we learn. It's in the hard times that we learn, and that's where guts are developed. And of course, the key to that is if our children succeed or fail, truly isn't really the point. The point is that they try, right? That they tried, they may fail, and they try again, mm-hmm. and they may fail. And they try again, because that's where we learn. And each time they learn a little bit more, and that course that obviously develops that resilience. And I often say, you know, we want to raise weebles, right? The old thing of weebles wobble, but they don't fall
down.
You know, we want to raise weebles. So when they get knocked down, they bounce back up, right? They bounce back up. And, of course, how do we do that? You know, another way of doing that is that we pour truth into them so that they develop integrity, and through doing this, they develop that tenacity. And one of the things I'll mention about integrity and tenacity is if of all things we could teach and instill in today's children growing up in this social media saturated world and environment of comparison that they are growing up in, never have we seen such comparison as we see today. Such a damaging comparison. But just imagine if we can help our children understand that the only person you compete with is yourself. If we start our children out from the very, very beginning, from 2 and 3 years of age, that it doesn't matter what anyone else has and what's going on and what she did and what he got and those kinds of things, that what matters most is we're not worried about being number one. We're going to worry about being the best. We're going to concentrate on becoming the best that God created us to be, and keeping our eyes on the Lord and the purpose he has for our lives, and competing only each day with ourselves, and get their eyes off of others and get their eyes on becoming all that they can be in those areas of striving and failing and trying again and working toward developing that tenacity to keep going. We're gonna develop some pretty strong hearts that can withstand whatever the culture throws against them.
You know, there's so much to unpack in what you said, Jill, so much wisdom there. I want to go back and really drill down on this concept of happiness, because I do think that is a lie that a lot of parents have really adopted in this age of modern parenting because of the social media saturation. We talk a lot about social media impacting kids, but it impacts us as parents. And you talked about comparison, and comparison says, the comparison is that pesky thief of joy. Hang on just a second, y'all. We're going to get Jill back. But in the meantime, comparison does steal our joy. And we look at how other parents are raising their kids, the experiences that they are giving them, because so many of those are social media worthy or they're not. And we see vacations that happen. We see select sports that happen. We see other experiences or community groups. And we start to think, oh, I need to give my kid that too. My kid needs to have that. I don't want my kid to go without. And we want that from a good place in our heart. We have the best intention. It's not like we're sitting there thinking as parents, oh, let me just give my kid everything that the Joneses have. But we're thinking we want to provide what's best for our kids. And often we want to provide them better than what we had. But I'm going to dive into this concept when we come back on the other side of this break. Don't go away. We'll be right back with more from Jill Garner and Strongheart.
A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there's an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Okay, okay, okay. I'm about to have a good day. No matter what they say. Sun is shining down on me. Birds are singing praise. I'm about to have a good day. In every single way. The God who made the universe knows me by my name, so it's a good day. Baby in my arms, walking through the neighborhood. Living in the present, not what I should have put. I remember back when I was low as a rug. Now I'm standing up, look at what my father does. Turning all things new, gray skies blue. Hear the church say, and won't he do it? I know he's got my back. That's why I'm singing that.
Welcome back, friends. Are you having a good day? Listen, it depends on how you look at it. I am having a little bit of a chaotic day myself. We're having some tech issues here, but I think that we've got those all straightened out. But whatever kind of day that you're having, I invite you to just take a minute to listen in. I've got such an encouraging show for you today. We're talking to Jill Garner. She is an accomplished speaker, advocate, and founder of Manners of the Heart. This is a nonprofit that is reawakening respect in our society for the sake of the next generation. And isn't that something that we really, really need? And we're talking about her book, Strong Heart, Cultivating Humility, Respect, and Resilience in Your Child. And I think this is something that we all want as parents. We all want our kids to be respectful. We all want them to have humility. We all want them to be resilient. And before the break, we were just talking about replacing happiness with joy. I think this is one of the greatest lies that we have bought as parents, is feeling like our main goal in life is to make them happy. I mean, heaven forbid that they're unhappy for a moment, that they go without anything. We want them to have so much better than what we had, but we just feel like our job is to raise a happy child. So I'm going to read you a little excerpt out of Jill's book where she quotes parenting expert John Rosemond, who says, "Your job is to raise a person who is respectful of others no matter their circumstances, compassionate, charitable, hardworking, trustworthy, and always puts forth his or her best effort. The road to self-sufficiency is paved with frustration, disappointment, failure, falling flat on one's face, and other equally unhappy experiences. We can't afford to deny children these things." And that is what Jill is saying, that when we fix every problem for our kids, we deny the opportunity for them to fix it. And so, Jill, I want to bring you back in and let's talk more about this concept of pursuing happiness for our kids, which is just a dead end. It is futile.
Well, you know, Jessica, it's this will be a hard truth to hear, but it's the truth. We actually become an obstacle to our children experiencing joy, true joy, when our goal is happiness, which is hard to hear, but it really is the truth. I'll give you a little, you mentioned my stories up front. I'll give you listeners a little story. One of my boys wanted to play the drums. And I was like, "Oh, can we do a guitar? Aren't you interested?" And you know, something a little easier than on the ear than the drums. And it was his brother was doing the guitar. He wanted the drums. I said, "Okay, let's roll with it." Well, he got started, and it was horrible. And he would tell you that today. I mean, I was standing in front of him. Okay, son, we got some rhythm. We can find it. Come on. And I mean, there was no rhythm. It was terrible. And I kept working with him and encouraging him, and I got him a drum master, you know, to help him. And so I'd take him to lessons, and he'd come home and he'd practice. And I never told him he was great. I wasn't going to worry about him being happy in this moment. I wanted to help him learn to overcome this and succeed in it, right? I wanted to help him become the best he could be in this endeavor. So I didn't say, man, that's awesome. Man, you're so great. That's wonderful. Woo! You know, because it wasn't yet. But that word, that key word to this is yet. That's going after joy, not happiness. And so I'd encourage him and say, you know, hang in there, you know, keep working on it, keep trying. But I never told him how wonderful he was because he wasn't there yet. But I kept encouraging. Our kids don't need false praise, because what is really, what's the truth of a false praise? It's really a lie, isn't it? I mean, false praise equals a lie. And guess who knows that? Our children. Our children know that. When we're worrying about keeping them happy and we're going to give them false praise, they understand, well, what is that about? Because that wasn't any good. Why is she telling me these things? So instead, it's encouragement we give them, not praise, not false praise, and not really not praise, but encouragement. They can find people to praise them. They need us to encourage them. So anyway, the end of the story, so he kept working on it, kept working on it. One day I'm cooking supper, and I hear this really amazing drum beat. And I really thought it was a little tape that he was listening to from his teacher trying to mimic it. You know, I thought it was like the real thing. And I opened the door and I said, boys, boys. And he looks at me and he slammed his drumsticks on the drum and he said, Mom, I can feel it. And I said, oh, son, I can feel it too. Rip it. And he ripped it out, threw those sticks up in the air. I mean, now, my question, is that a moment of happiness or was that absolute joy? It's obviously joy, right? Mm-hmm. He had worked hard. He had gotten there. He accomplished it. He discovered that he could do it. He did it. He discovered that he could do it. And that was true joy. And just imagine, if I had been worried about keeping him happy, not letting me disappoint it, not letting him have any failures, and had given him that false praise along the way, guarantee what always happens is they walk away. They give it up. They either believe, well, maybe that is the best I'll ever do, so I might as well not try. Or they believe, wow, well, if she's going to tell me I'm great for doing nothing, I don't have to put any effort in because somebody will fix it, which we see so often in today's kids, don't we? So it's going after that joy rather than worrying about that happiness. You know, happiness is fleeting. It passes in an instant, but joy is something that's lasting. That moment of accomplishing something and finding out, discovering how good he really could be is joy. I have a grandson now who's sophomore in college and quite an accomplished swimmer and is really, I mean, it's his passion in life. He goes and does the 5:30 a.m. and the 8 o'clock at night. And, you know, he is really into swimming, but I love it when Jack's head pops out of the water, at the end of a run, because he is not looking for if he's first, second, or third. He's looking up to see if he took a little time off. Because when you ask Jack, what is it about swimming? And he said, I want to find out how fast God made me. I want to discover. I want to find out. I want to find out. And I always think about, when Jack says that, I always think about Eric Little, you know, from Chariots of Fire, when he said, I run, and when I run, I feel God's pleasure. When we are helping our children discover joy, not moment-to-moment happiness, what we're really doing is we're helping them come into that moment where they feel God's pleasure and their efforts and their trying and what they are working to accomplish. And just imagine, just think, if we're worried about their happiness, we're going to be that obstacle to them becoming all that God created them to be and experiencing that joy and pleasure in God, seeing the fruits of their efforts.
One of the things I appreciate about your message, Jill, is that the title of this chapter that we're talking about in your book, Strong Heart, is Replace Happiness with Joy. We're not saying that we don't want our kids to ever be happy. We're saying that right. if you raise them and that's the goal is to make them happy and that directs all of your intention, all mm-hmm. of your decisions is mm-hmm. how can I make them happy in this moment? You're so right because we rob them of the opportunity to fail, to try again, to build mm-hmm. resilience. And they mm-hmm. are going to have that throughout their life. And I know I've always been very honest with my kids. And then, you know, the nice side effect of that, honestly, Jill, is that it makes my compliments mean a lot more to them too, because mm-hmm. they know they can trust me to tell them the truth. Right. So I don't just always tell them, oh yeah, that looks great. That sounds great. Oh, that reads great. I will tell them, ooh, mm-hmm. this needs some work. And when I tell them mm-hmm. this is amazing, it means so much more. It resonates with them because mm. they know they can trust me to tell them the truth. And I feel like there are a lot of parents, and I find myself falling into this trap sometimes too, Jill, I do. And we see it, you know, we just don't let our kids experience any discomfort. And one of the things you talk about in this chapter is boredom, like not even letting our kids experience any boredom. We have to entertain mm-hmm. them 24/7. Mm-hmm. And I see this especially with younger kids, you know, out at a restaurant or maybe in a church service, and they're immediately given a screen. But I think about how much that stifles imagination and how much it doesn't teach them, like, sit quietly. You can sit quietly mm-hmm. for 20 minutes and have mm-hmm. self-control and develop those mm-hmm. things. And so what do you share with us some of the wisdom that you shared about technology and imagination and boredom?
Mm. Yeah, I tell you, one of my hangups with the screens is that it entertains them, but it does not engage their imagination. You know, it doesn't engage them. Two of our grand boys came over the house one afternoon, and they were probably about maybe 2 years apart, maybe 8 and 6, something like that. And as soon as they, maybe 7 and 9. Anyway, as soon as they walked in the door, the younger one said, Gigi, give me your phone. I want to show something. There's some a game or something, because he does that on other phones. And before I could say no, the older brother said to his younger brother, Austin, we don't do that at Papa and Gigi's. Get over it.
I love it.
Before I could say anything, because he already knew that when you come to Papa and Gigi's, we're going to do everything in the world except get on a screen. You know, we're not going to get on a screen. We're going to do everything else, because we're going to make sure that your imagination is engaged. You know, I really do have such a hang up, and I have to be careful with my grandchildren, because I can fall into the trap of wanting to entertain them too much. I am guilty. Not necessarily with screens even, but just this idea of mm-hmm. trying to keep them busy and involved and engaged every minute, because I don't want them to be bored. You know, there's the word, right? At Papa mm-hmm. and Gigi's, they're supposed to have fun at Papa and Gigi's, you know? And I can fall into that trap. I have to guard myself all the time. And recently, my two littles, who are 7 and 8 years old, two little girl sisters, the littlest of the seven, they were here. And before I could turn around, they had gotten all the stuffed animals out, and they put them around in a big circle in the little entrance at the house, and put them in a little circle, and were putting cards in front of them, and they were setting up school for the animals, and setting it all up. And then they got an angel out of the closet that was left over from Christmas, and they got that out and put her over in a corner and said that was going to be the chapel. And I mean, they were building this whole school. It was just precious. And I just sat back saying, oh, this is what we want to see in our children, because this is what this modern technological age is robbing our children of, you know, especially, you know, in our schools. We just had snow days last week in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. If you didn't hear the big bulletin, we actually had snow in Baton Rouge. It was just the most wonderful, magical time here in deep Louisiana. But interestingly, several of the schools kept going because they could do all the online learning now, you know, and they had all the homework to do, and they were on their box, you know, doing everything without any engagement, you know, from teachers of any sort. And, you know, I understand there's a place for it. I'm not totally anti. I understand there's a place for it. But for our children, and these were elementary school kids, you know, growing up on the boxes at school, that should even make us more acutely aware that we need to get them off those boxes, you know, outside mm-hmm. that, and engage them in life. Because, yeah. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, Jill, I agree so much. Mm-hmm. We really need to do that. And you provide some compelling food for thought here in your book when you talk about just how the different generations have changed. And we talk about Disney World opening and being advertised as the happiest place on earth, right? And then after that came McDonald's with Happy Meals. And I hadn't put these things together. But you think about it, you know, I grew up in Gen X, and that's the latchkey kid generation where we had boomer mm-hmm. parents who, you know, were just on a journey for to find love. That was what their generation was all about. And so Gen X, mm-hmm. I think, overcompensated because we wanted our kids to feel mm-hmm. loved and seen, and then they loved their parents. Mm-hmm. But we have really moved. This is going to be a tough thing to say, Jill, but I'm just going to move out and say it. I really do feel like we live in a world mm-hmm. today where people idolize their children. And I mean that in a very literal sense, that they are mm-hmm. idols mm-hmm. in the home, that it is all mm-hmm. about, you know, making sure they have the latest clothes, the latest access to everything, mm-hmm. just anything you want. I want to make sure I can say yes to everything. And I do feel like mm-hmm. we are robbing them of the opportunity mm-hmm. to find joy for mm-hmm. themselves. We're coming up on a break here, but I'll give you just about a minute or so to respond to that.
Okay. I'll close this out with a quick little story to just reiterate that. 5-year-old birthday party, there ended up 80-something people. This is a real story. At this birthday party, kids were in the corners crying because they couldn't find mom and dad. And I mean, it was a nightmare. One of those, you know, all-out big parties that they say are for the children, but it really wasn't. It was an adult party where children happened to be present instead of, you know, the birthday party for the 5-year-old. So that 2 weeks later, one of the little girls at the party, her mom said, ask her, so what are we going to do for your birthday party coming up? What kind of party do you want? You know, waiting for her child to say, you know, a big party and I want to do this and that. She said, I just want my best friend to come spend the night.
Aww.
Can we do that? Can we do that and have pizza and ice cream?
Mm.
Point made, right?
It's all about relationships, Jill. They do. Mm-hmm. And it's all about relationships. Yeah. They want our time more than anything. And you emphasize that in your book, that parents are still key. They have the greatest influence. And I know that parents out there listening, they want their kids to have strong hearts built for humility and respect and resilience. And so we'll talk more about how to develop a strong heart. I've got some questions for you when we come up, Jill, when we come back, Jill, about the self-esteem and how we can reframe that. So don't go away. We'll be right back with more from Jill Garner.
What's your reputation? Kind? Generous? Shy? Rick Robertson says it would be wonderful to have the reputation of being someone who did things that were right in God's eyes. Of course, our best example of that is Jesus. And in the article in The Stand called A Soul Refreshing Rain, Rick helps us see how Jesus' attributes can change our daily lives. Visit afa.net/thestand and read A Soul Refreshing Rain today. afa.net/thestand.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
See my hands and look at my feet. It's okay if it's hard to believe. I have faith that you will do greater things. It's my time to go, but before I leave, go tell the I've gotta go now for a little
Welcome back, friends. That song is The Commission by Kane. And there is no one that God has called us more to share the gospel with than if you are a parent and you have children. There is no greater task that we have to steward than to introduce our children to the hope that is found in Jesus Christ. In a world that seems like it is more chaotic by the day, I often hear the message of, how can I have kids in a world like this? Well, we can have kids in a world like this because God has prepared us to live in a world like this. He has equipped us. He has given you exactly the child that you need in the right time, in the right place, with the right gifts to be able to steward them through. I've been talking to Jill Garner about her book, Strong Heart, Cultivating Humility, Respect, and Resiliency in Your Child. I've got all these tabs on this book, so many things that resonated with me, but you know, in a world that constantly tells our kids that their happiness is the most important thing, and sometimes as parents, we give that message too, we really need to teach them instead to cultivate joy, to build the fruits of the Spirit, to have character in their heart. That is what's going to bring joy to their life. That is something that's not fleeting, that's deeply rooted. And happiness depends on their circumstances, whether they have what they want, not even so much what they need, or if they're achieving their goals, or if they're getting external validation. But joy, joy is steady. It is unshaken by the ups and downs of life. And there's so many ways that we can help our children find joy. So the first thing I want to ask you is, I'm dropping things off my desk here. It is, I'm telling you, it's that kind of day. I can find joy in the chaos. Jill and I, you have no idea the chaos that's going on back here, but we are still here and pushing through it. And Jill, I want to go to this concept of self-respect and not self-esteem. And how do we, what's the difference? How do you differentiate that? And how do you help your kids to develop self-respect?
Okay. Loaded question.
Yeah, it is.
I'll give you the, I think I'll give you the mirror or the window, because I think that's how it's most clearly seen. So if you think of children, if you think of a child looking in a mirror, you hold a mirror up in front of them and they're looking in the mirror. Think of that as the mirror of self-esteem. What self-esteem does is it's as if they're looking in a mirror and they only see themselves in a mirror, right? You can't see through a mirror, so they can't see others. They don't see how their actions affect others. They can't see others looking at them and explains why they do these wild, crazy things, looking for someone to see the real me, because in the mirror of self-esteem, they only see themselves. So think of that, putting that mirror down, taking your child to a window. We call that the window of self-respect, because at a window, they see a little glimpse of themselves. You know how you see that little reflection? You can see your face. But at the window of self-respect, they see through themselves, beyond themselves, past themselves. So at the window of self-respect, they see through themselves and beyond themselves to others. They can see how their actions affect others. They see others looking at them. And life becomes all about, what can I do to serve? What has God put me here to do? What do I have to contribute to the lives of others? Where in the mirror of self-esteem, it's only about what's in it for me. What is someone going to do for me? It's all about me. What am I going to get? What is someone doing for me? How is someone going to serve me? Rather than at the window of self-respect, life is all about, what am I going to do to serve others? In the mirror, kids can't see God. They can't see God looking at them. That is the explanation in today's world for our young adults and those just gravely sad statistics of today that they're falling into. The things they're falling into, and they're falling out of life. And the suicide rates and the drug addictions, the depression, the anxiety, all of it, that's where it rests. Where at the window, they see God. They see God looking at them, and they have, that's where hope is found, in this idea of self-respect. So let me add to that, self-esteem, the clearest definition is esteeming self. Pretty simple. It's the esteeming of self. It's that mantra that we hear so often today, love yourself, love yourself. If you just love yourself, the world will love you. Well, if you just step back for one moment and think about that, the more deeply we fall in love with ourselves, the less capable we are of loving others, and the less lovable we become, right? Because we get lost in ourselves, and that's what's happened with the self-esteem movement. It has driven two generations really now into themselves. I just read a new study came out, I think it was yesterday, in the last 2 or 3 days, talking about parents, these young parents of today, and talking about, you know, how stressful, how, you know, miserable, and that they're overwhelmed, you know, with the whole idea of parenting for a multitude of reasons. But one of those reasons is because they were raised in that self-esteem movement, in this esteeming of self. And so if we're going to help our children get outside themselves, right, then we're going to start from a very young age. Let me give you something really practical. So let's say the age of 2 or 3, and we're going to start teaching our children. This is how you make the flip from self-esteem to self-respect. We're going to teach them to start picking up their room, and we're going to have our shoes, and we're going to keep our shoes in the bottom of the closet. We're going to keep the teddy bears on the bottom shelf. And so, but here's the flip. Rather than say, we're going to do this so your room won't be a mess, we're going to say, so that no one comes in and trips over your things. We're going to start picking up the wet towels and hanging them up so that the next person who comes in and they don't have to move your things in order to get to their things. We're going to tie their actions to how they affect those around them to help them develop an other-centered perspective on life, an other-centered worldview on life, so that they get outside themselves and then they don't get lost in themselves, which is what happens with this whole concept of self-esteem.
You know, I have 3 questions for our listeners as I'm sitting here listening to mm-hmm. you, Jill. I think there's 3 questions that every parent should ask mm-hmm. themselves right now. That first one is, are you allowing comparison to steal joy from your parenting journey? Mm-hmm. Are you looking mm-hmm. at everybody else and thinking, I'm not able to provide what other people are providing? I feel like it's not enough. I'm constantly on that treadmill trying to make more money, to provide more things. Are you mm-hmm. allowing comparison to steal your joy instead of focusing on the journey that God has called you to and equipped you to? That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two is your motivation as a parent to make your child happy or to make them healthy? Because sometimes that is mm-hmm. not the same. And there's a lot of times, Jill, where I'll tell my kids, I know that you don't like this. I know you're unhappy with me right now. I love you mm-hmm. enough to be comfortable with that. I'm fine with that if you're unhappy with me. Mm-hmm. I love you enough to mm-hmm. sit in that. But we feel like, you know, they have those uncomfortable emotions and we're like, oh, well, I don't want you to be angry or upset or not mm-hmm. like me. And we cannot be their mm-hmm. friends sometimes, Jill. That comes later in life.
Right.
We have to be their parents. So that's the question number two. Right. Is your motivation making your mm-hmm. child happy or healthy? And number mm-hmm. three, are you focused on entertaining your child or training right. your child? And this is something right. that you talk about. You share a really yes. convicting story about a 13-year-old in your book. I want you to share that, Jill.
Yeah, I was helping some parents with their daughter. And she hit 12. And of course, 12 is that age of that all children struggle with. It's that moment of moving from childhood, heading into toward adulthood. And they're trying to decide, are they going to believe what their parents have taught them? Is that what they know what their parents might believe, but is that really what I'm going to believe as a 12-year-old? And that's the tug we feel at that age. Well, some parents were having that struggle with their 12-year-old. We talked it through, talked with the daughter and worked through some things and thought, you know, this is what this is. It's not more serious. Well, within a few months, it became very clear it was much more serious than that. And she was really veering off track. And we started working more deeply on these issues. And we went to a counselor together to assess some things and to see what had happened. And we teach through our trainings that there's 2 soul questions that children need satisfied at each stage of development. And so we were looking at those soul questions of who's going to be in charge and, are you real when that child is looking at a parent? That's one of the questions at that age. If we're not real in our faith and our beliefs, if we're not living it out, we're talking it, but we're not walking it, we're going to destroy our children's ability to choose the right path for themselves. So we're looking at all this, and the counselor said, okay, do what? Let's do an assessment. Let's really look back on her growing up years, and let's see how much time you spent in entertaining her and how much time you spent in truly intentionally training. And as they began to assess it, oh my goodness, it came down to about 10% of her childhood had been spent in training her and intentionally training her in scriptures and life skills. She wasn't, they had not given her chores. She didn't have chores to do. There were no expectations. They were giving way too much and they were expecting way too little. And they recognized that that's what had gone wrong. She had grown up in a childhood in this family of being constantly entertained. And when it came time for her to understand and begin to assess in her own heart, so what do I believe? Who am I? What am I about? What's my identity? Where do I stand on things? She was clueless and was faltering and was set up. Really, it's like you mentioned something hard earlier. This is another hard mm-hmm. thing for parents mm-hmm. to hear. But she was really being set up to fall for whatever next thing came along. And that because she had been growing up being entertained without time set aside to intentionally train her in the word, train her in truth, and train by, when we think of, you know, physical training our muscles and, you know, she had not even been trained in, like I said, in life skills and the expectation of chores. And the good news, I won't leave you hanging. The good news is they got back on track, not mm-hmm. to worry. They did get back on track. And of course, that's what's so wonderful with God's grace and God's help. When we recognize we've messed up, don't wallow in it. I mean, I know it's hard, but don't wallow in it because that's just going to prolong the solution. Don't wallow in it. Just get on your knees. Say, mm-hmm. Lord, I've been wrong. And Lord, I know you have the answer. Help me get back on track and bring my child back. Help us get back on track. And he will help. And mm-hmm. they made the flip. They started assigning chores and they made the flip again. They started serving as a family, which they had never done. And they got rid of all this entertainment and they began to build relationship rather than, because often when we get caught up in that trap of entertainment, we think, well, we're doing all these things. And like they had thought, we do things, we go on trips or whatever, and we're doing things. But it was not building one-on-one relationship. It was just keeping everybody, what's that terrible word, happy. intentionally training and building relationships.
Jill, that is so convicting. And I'm so glad that you ended with a message of hope because, you know, I think there's some people who might even listen to me on the radio. I've got four kids who are emerging young adults and older teenagers, and I have great relationships with them. But Jill, it did not start that way. My oldest daughter was 13 years old when I fell to my knees and realized that I was failing miserably as a parent. I did not have a relationship with my mom, and my motivation was I will do anything to not lose that relationship with you. And that means mm-hmm. keeping you happy. You know, I don't want you to be unhappy with me. Any little conflict mm-hmm. that we would have, I would just have a crisis of confidence. And I would think, okay, well, I can't do that. And I realized, Jill, that planting and harvesting don't happen in the same season. And I had to plant mm-hmm. seeds and trust that God would water mm-hmm. them, God would nurture them. I realized mm-hmm. I needed a new skill set, a new mindset. And now mm-hmm. 10 years later, my daughter is on the radio with me sharing what we have learned. And it has not been easy. Mm-hmm. It has been really difficult because as much as, you know, I've had to focus on training her, I've had to train myself. I've had to heal myself from some things that I experienced. And I want to give parents hope. And I can't believe we're out of time, Jill, but tell people where we can find you because I feel like we have more to talk about. But tell people where they can find you and where they can find your ministry.
Well, they can find the ministry, Manners of the Heart, at mannersoftheheart.org. They can also find Jill at Jill Garner Content. JillGarnerContent.org is the best place to go look around. But, you know, our books and our resources are available pretty much everywhere. And we love to connect. And, I mean, that's what we're here for. You know, that's what we're here is to help parents of today raise up a generation of strong hearts who will be morally courageous, grounded in truth, and fortified with self-respect. That's what we're here to do.
I mean, I am here for it. I love it. And parenting can be, it's one of the most important things that we will do. There's no shortage of advice, but you've got some good advice coming from Jill Garner. Every parent wants their kid to have a strong heart. Listen, friend, wherever you are in your parenting journey, I pray the Lord will bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And listen, I'll see you right back here tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.